Okay, Erev Tov, ladies and gentlemen. People continue, Rabbi, as you see, continue to come into the Shia as we speak. It's my great schut once again to formally welcome everyone to this special series of Shiurim from Moreno Rabbeinu, Rav Zev Leff. This evening's topic is, I believe, a little bit not only about looking ahead to Lag BaOmer, but talking about what this entire period of Sfiras HaOmer is all about. And as always, I'm sure Rabbi Leff has both chidushim and tremendous chizik for all of us. And it's a great schut for us to once again be able to welcome Rabbi Leff and to offer the shiurim and to learn together with the Rosh Yeshiva this evening. And we look forward to continuing this series as we look ahead to the summer months as well. So without further ado, Moreno Rabbeinu Rav Zev Leff.
Thank you, Rabbi Shor. Thank you again for inviting me and giving this discourse. Okay, one of the ideas behind the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, of counting the Omer, is presented by the Sefer HaChinuch. He says that the Jewish people knew that 50 days after they would leave Egypt, they would receive the Torah. That's hinted to the Mepharshim say in what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu way back at the Sneh, the burning bush. He told him, when you take the people out of Egypt, you will serve me on this mountain. The word ta'avdu has an extra nun at the end. And the nun is the number 50. So it's hinted that in 50 days after they leave Mitzrayim, they will receive the Torah. And since they knew that this was going to be the occurrence, what would occur 50 days afterwards, they aspired and longed for that day and counted the days longingly. When will those 50 days be up and we'll be able to receive the Torah? So that is the foundation of Sfiras HaOmer. Just like they counted anxiously, longingly, aspired to the giving of the Torah, every year we have a re-acceptance, a re-giving of the Torah. Our holidays are not mere commemorations, but we relive the occurrence. So every year we also count the days longingly, aspire towards the giving of the Torah. And the Bible says, how much of an aspiration, how much of a longing does it have to be? He says it can be compared to a slave who's working in the hot sun and longs for a moment in the shade. That's how intense the longing has to be for Torah. And basically the idea being that one cannot achieve any goal without aspiring towards it, without longing for it. And that is brought out in the following Medrash, according to the way the Michtam Eliyahu explains it. The Medrash says the following. Rabbi Akiva Hayadorish. Rabbi Akiva was giving a shir, a drasha. Ubikshu atalmidim lenamne. And his students began to fall asleep. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. Ubikesh laororon. And Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake him up. So he said to them the following, Marosa Esther, Shemolcha Almea V'Esther V'Sheva Medinos, what did Esther see that enabled her to rule over 127 Medinos? Tavo Esther, Basbita Shalsara, Shechois Almea V'Esther V'Sheva Shonim, V'Timloch Almea V'Esther V'Sheva Medinos. Let Esther, the great-great-granddaughter of Sarah, who lived 127 years, rule over 127 provinces. So they all woke up. What in the world is there any connection between the 127 years of Sarah and the 127 provinces of Esther, except that they're the same number? And Rabbi Akiva went on. So the Michtam Eliyahu says it's unreasonable to assume that Rabbi Akiva just told them something startling that made no sense to wake them up. There must have been a message here. The Michtam Eliyahu says the following. Rabbi Akiva surmised that the reason that his students were not paying attention is because he was speaking of levels way above their head, way beyond them. And they reasoned the following. Why should we listen now? These are things that are way above us. We'll get a good rest now. And when Rabbi Akiva comes down to our level, we'll be well rested and be able to listen. To that, Rabbi Akiva said, you're making a big mistake. Do you know how Esther reached the level of being able to rule over 127 Medinos? Because her whole life, she aspired to be like Sarah Imenu, who is the quintessent queen, quintessent royalty. What does that mean? It says that Sarah Imenu didn't just live 127 years, that 127 years passed over her. But Kulam Shavim L'Torah, all Sarah Imenu's life was equally for the good. But that doesn't mean it was equally good, because it wasn't. 90 years she was barren weren't equally good with the 37 years she had Yitzchak. The night she was dragged to Paro or Avimelech was not equally good to the day she celebrated Yitzchak's bris. They weren't equally good, but they were equally for the good. You can't control the situations that come to you in life most of the time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls that. But you can control how you deal with them, how you relate to them. And that takes a tremendous amount of shlita, of power and control. And that's real malchus. So Sarah was the quintessent malka. She ruled over every second of her life and directed it for the good. And Esther aspired to be like Sarah. She never reached the level of Sarah. But because she aspired to the highest levels, she at least reached her own potential. So too said Rabbi Akiva to his students. If you don't aspire towards the highest levels, if you don't look up to levels beyond yourself, then you'll never reach your own potential. So that is why the Tana Dvei Eliyahu says, Chayiv Adam Lomar Mosa Yagiu Maisa L'Maisa Avosei Avrami Yaakov. Every Jew has to say, when will my deeds reach the deeds of Avram, Yisrael, and Yaakov? Do we think that we're going to be able to reach that level? Of course not. But if we don't aspire towards the highest levels, we'll never reach our own potential either. My Rebbe, my Rosh Hashiva of Gifter Zatzal, said that there are a few Gemaras that have the same style. And you can ask the same question on them and give the same answer. For instance, the Gemara says, if a person wants to become wise, he should daven facing a little bit towards the south, because the menorah was in the south, and the menorah is a symbol of wisdom, so davening a little bit towards the south is a schooler for wisdom. Or the Gemara says, man de boy le mehevi chasida, a person who wants to be a chassid should learn the laws of brachos, Pirkei Avos, and the laws of damages. The Rosh Hashiva asks the following question. The Gemara never uses an extra letter, let alone an extra word. It's always concise. Why didn't it just say, Hayadrim Yachkim? If you daven to the south, you'll be a Chacham. Why did it say, whoever wants to be a Chacham, daven to the south? Just tell me, if you daven to the south, you'll be a Chacham. Why did it have to say, whoever wants to be a Chassid, do X, Y, and Z? Just tell me, if you do X, Y, and Z, you'll be a chassid. He answered very simply. If you don't want to be a chacham, you can daven to the south 1,000 times a day, you'll never be a chacham. Everything starts with a desire, with an aspiration. If you don't long for it, and you don't desire it, you'll never reach anything no matter what you do. So therefore, in order to really receive the Torah properly, and to reach one's potential in Torah, a person has to aspire towards it. So that is the basic idea of Sfiras HaOmer, longing, aspiring, anxiously awaiting the giving of the Torah, counting each day anxiously and longingly. And even Moshe Rabbeinu, without desiring and aspiring towards something, couldn't reach it. There's a Gemara that says the following. When Moshe Rabbeinu encountered the Shekhinah in the burning bush, the first time in his career, so he covered his face because he was afraid to look at the Shekhinah, the fire of the Shekhinah in the burning bush. One opinion of the Gemara says he was rewarded for that. He was very humble and very modest till he covered his face. And in the schus and the merit that he covered his face and was very modest and humble, later on, Karan Or Panav, later on, Moshe Rabbeinu's face, after the giving of the Torah, shone with the glory of the Shekhinah. The other opinion says he was punished for it. When Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem, Hareini Noes Kvodecha, let me see your glory. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Kishiratzisi lo ratzisa, when I wanted to show you my glory in the burning bush, you didn't want to look. Avshav shetz ata rotsa, now you want to see it, ani and any rotsa, I don't want to show you. Very difficult that there should be an argument so polarized. One says he got rewarded for the same thing, the other one says he got punished. And also, it doesn't sound like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it sounds like a six-year-old spiting somebody. When I wanted to show you, you didn't want to look. Now you want to look, I don't want to show you. That doesn't sound like God. I think the idea is the following. Everybody agrees that Moshe Rabbeinu should have covered his face and not looked. It was modest, it was humble, and he was rewarded for that. The other opinion is not that he was punished for covering his face. That's not what it says. It doesn't say, Kishiratzisi, when I wanted to show you my glory, lo hibatata, you didn't look. No, you shouldn't have looked. You were right. But lo ratzisa, you should have covered your face and from behind your fingers, you should have had the tremendous desire, when will come the day I'll be able to look. But you lo ratzisa, you didn't even want to look. And therefore, since you didn't aspire and long for that day, then the day hasn't come. And therefore, you're not able to achieve that level because you didn't aspire towards it from the beginning. And that is, the Rambam says, that someone who doesn't believe in Mashiach or doesn't anxiously await his coming, so he's a person who is considered an apikoros, a non-believer. I understand if he doesn't believe in Mashiach, he's a non-believer. But if he believes in Mashiach, he's just not anxiously awaiting it. Why is he called a non-believer? Because if you really appreciate something, then you'll long for it and you'll aspire for it. And if you don't long and aspire, that means that deep down you really don't believe it. So that is why the name of the holiday is Shavuos, weeks. It's only a one-day holiday. Why do we call it weeks? Because it's the product of 7 weeks of aspiring and longing. That's what creates the quality of the receiving of the Torah. It's the 7 weeks of aspiring that went into preparing for it that creates that one day. With that, you can understand something else. According to one opinion in the Gemara, when the time came to receive the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu saw the Jewish people were not ready. So he asked God to add on one more day, to delay the giving of the Torah one extra day. And God agreed with him, and the Torah was given, delayed one day. So it always bothered me, if they couldn't accomplish in 49 days to prepare, what was one more day going to help? But according to this idea, I think the idea is the following. If you're looking forward to a very important occasion, and it's delayed, so if it's delayed a long time, you get very frustrated. But if it's delayed only a short amount of time, it increases your aspiration and your longing for that day. Moshe Rabbeinu saw the Jewish people were still not longing and aspiring towards the giving of the Torah. So he asked God to push it off one day, delay it one day, and that would increase and multiply their feelings of aspiration, their feelings of longing, for the giving of the Torah. It also answers another idea concerning the giving of the Torah. It says that when the Torah was given, it was so awesome, so traumatic. Porcha nishmasam, the Jews actually died, and God had to revive them. And yet the Medrash says that the Torah was given, the fikoach shel kol echad ve'echad. God gave the Torah according to the ability of each person. He gave it according to each one's power. They received what they could receive. So if God gave the Torah according to the koach of each one, Why was it so traumatic that their souls fled them? It was tailor-made to each one. I think the idea is, it doesn't say that it was given according to their power at that moment. It was given according to their ultimate potential. And the gulf between a person's current level and his ultimate potential is so vast that Parcha Nishmasam was so traumatic. So a person always has to long and aspire towards higher and higher goals and higher ideas in order to be able to achieve anything. If you don't aspire towards higher and higher things, you won't even reach your own potential. However, that is not enough. It's not enough just to long and aspire, when will the Torah be given? If that was the case, then we should count down, not count up. Right? I'm aspiring toward the Torah. How many days left? 49, 48, 47. That's how you count down to anything that you're looking forward to. I remember when my children were small. They were still in school years ago. So this time of year, they were making two countings. They were counting the Omer, and they were counting the Gomer to the end of school. But the two counts were different. The Omer, they counted up. And the Gomer, they were counting down. How many days left till school is over? Why don't we count the Omer down? Start on the second day of Pesach. Today is 49 days left, 48, 47. And then blast off on Shavuos, we get the Torah. Why do we count up? So an idea could be the following. There's a joke, story told. It's not a Gemara. Don't look it up anywhere. You won't find it. It's a story. There was a man who wanted to be a multimillionaire. And he envisioned himself having so much money and using it for so many good things. And he realized the only way he could ever be a multimillionaire is if he won the lottery. So every day, three times a day, at the end of his Shmona Esrei, he would beg God and pray with tears, please, God, let me win the lottery. And God, if I win the lottery, I promise you, half the money I'll give right away to tzedakah. The other half I will use for good things. So Rabban Shalom, if I win the lottery, you have to gain. So please let me win the lottery, please. And every day, three times a day, at the end of his Shmona Esrei, he would beg God, please, God, let me win the lottery. After 20 years of this, the angels came to the Rabban Shalom and they said, Rabban Shalom, we can't take this anymore. Every day we got to listen to this guy beg and plead and cry, let me win the lottery, let me win the lottery. You know, Rabban Shalom, he sounds sincere. What would be so terrible if you let him win the lottery? And the Rabban Shalom said, I'd love to let him win the lottery. He never bought a ticket. You can want and want and want, but if you don't buy the ticket, you're not going to win the lottery. And I found a medrash that says just this idea. The medrash says, Chalomoseim shel tzadikim, the dreams of tzadikim, hein bashamayim v'hein ba'aretz. The dreams of tzadikim are both in heaven and earth. Which dream is that referring to? The dream of Yaakov Avinu. He dreamt of a ladder that whose feet were on the ground and whose head was in the heavens. So his dream spanned heaven and earth. But Chalomoseim shel Rishoyim lo bashamayim v'lo ba'aretz. The dreams of wicked people are not in the heavens and not on the earth. Paro dreamt, v'hine omid alei yor, he was standing on the water of the Nile, not in the heavens and not on the earth, standing on water. He was the first person who thought we could walk on water. But in any case, so that are the dreams of Rishoyim. What does it mean? A tzaddik has lofty dreams. He aspires towards the highest goals, but he has a program firmly planted on the ground how he's going to reach it, a ladder, one rung at a time, right? He doesn't just stand on the ground and say, I wish I was at the top of the ladder, but he goes one rung at a time and works towards that goal. He buys the ticket. You can't just want. You have to have a ladder that has its head in the heavens, but you have to have it firmly planted on the ground with a program how you're going to slowly but surely ascend on that ladder towards your ultimate goal. So, and Rishoyim, they have no lofty goals, And they have no program. Everything is wishy-washy. It's all on the water. So another condition, therefore, of Sfiras HaOmer is how to express that tremendous longing and desire for the Torah. You don't just stand on the ground and say, oh, I wish I was there getting the Torah. But you firmly plant a ladder and you count day by day. Today is one day. What am I going to accomplish today that will bring me a little bit closer to my goal? Today is 2 days. What am I going to accomplish today that will bring me a little bit closer to my goal? It's not enough to aspire, but you have to work towards it with a program firmly planted on the ground. And that's why we don't count down. Counting down is really, these days aren't important. I just want to get rid of them to get towards the goal. The goal is what's important. But we count up. It's not enough to count the days. You have to make the days count. What am I going to do today to be able to get a little bit closer to my goal? And therefore, we count the day at the beginning of the day. Tonight, I already counted Sfira. We said, today is 29 days in the Omer, meaning this is the beginning of the 29th day. What am I going to do today that will bring me a little bit closer to my goal of receiving the Torah on the 50th day? And therefore, we count the weeks at the end of the week in order to monitor and see, are we really progressing? We've said 7 days, we're trying to get a little bit closer. Each day we're supposed to accomplish something. At the end of the week, we look back and we see, have we really ascended 7 more steps on that ladder? Or are we marching time on the same rung? So we count the day at the beginning of the day, and then we look back and see if we've really accomplished 7 days of ascending that during that week. The another idea is that is inherent in Sfiras HaOmer, why we count the day at the beginning of the day and we count the week at the end of the week is the following. The Vilna Gaon explains the following pasuk in Mishlei. It says, Lev chacham liyamino, v'lev ksia lishmolo. The heart of the chacham is to the right, and the heart of the fool is to the left. He explains it in the following way. When you're learning a sefer in Hebrew, what you've learned already is to your right. What you've yet to learn is to your left. The fool only looks to the left, sees how much more there is always to learn, and he gives up. I'll never be able to do it. He closes the book. That's the end of it. The Chacham also wants to learn more and more. But every once in a while, he looks to the right and sees what he's accomplished. And that gives him the strength and the incentive to go on. It's not enough just to aspire and to always look at where you're not, where you'd like to be. But you always have to also appreciate what you've accomplished, because that will give you the strength to go on. Otherwise, if you're always focused on where you're not and where you'd like to be, it could be very frustrating. And therefore, there's a concept of, even though when it comes to spiritual things, a person should never be mistapik b'muat, never satisfied with a minimum when it comes to spiritual things, but he should also be sameach b'chelko. He should be happy with what he's achieved, not satisfied with it, but happy with it. If you are satisfied, you'll never grow and you'll never achieve anything. If you're not happy, you'll always be frustrated. So you have to balance out the two. I'm happy with what I've achieved, but I'm not satisfied with it. I want more and more when it comes to spiritual things. We can learn this from Rachel Imenu. Rachel Imenu wants a child to the point where she says, if I don't have a child, it's like I'm dead. She begs her husband and begs the Rabbanu Shalom. And finally, God answered her prayers, and she has a child. What is she naming? Yosef. Why? 2 reasons, the Torah says. 1, Yosef li ben acher. Give me another one. Secondly, Osaf Hashem Escher Pasi, God took away my shame. Now, if you're someone, you're a teenage girl, who wants another dress, her parents to buy her another dress. And the parents say, you have a closet full of dresses. Why do you need another dress? And she begs them and begs them. Wakes them up 3 o'clock in the morning. Can I have the dress? Can I have the dress? And finally they say, okay, we'll get you another dress. And they buy her the dress. And you know what her reaction is? Can I have another one? What a chazer. What kind of ridiculous thing? Say thank you. Tomorrow ask for another one. You wanted a child so badly, and now you name him Yosef. I want another one. Say thank you. Don't say I want another one. And secondly, the second reason also doesn't make sense. God took away my shame. What shame did she have? So Rashi says two different interpretations. One is, until now, people said I wasn't fit to be one of the mothers of the Jewish people. And now I've been vindicated. That I understand. Took away her shame. But Rashi's second shot is, till now, if I broke a plate in the kitchen or I stole a cookie from the cookie jar, people would blame me. But now, Baruch Hashem, I have a kid, I can blame him. The kid broke the plate. The kid cooked the cookie. So now God took away my shame of being blamed for breaking plates and stealing cookies from the cookie jar. That's why Rachel Imenu wanted a child. That's why she said, if I don't have a child, I'll die because I can't stand being blamed for breaking plates in the kitchen. Now I want to blame the kid. Besides the fact, it's not going to work. Nobody's going to believe that a one-day-old child broke a plate or stole a cookie. And secondly, what kind of Jewish mother is that? The Jewish mothers that I know take the blame for everything their children do. They don't blame their child for what they do. What's Rachel saying? I think this brings out this point. When it comes to spiritual things, and Rachel Imenu wanted a child for the highest spiritual reasons. How do I know? I'll tell you how I know. Because later on, when she was having that second child, and she was dying, she was probably hemorrhaging, losing a lot of blood, and there was a danger that she'd go into shock. So the midwife wanted to calm her down, because that's what you do to somebody who's in danger of going into shock. You try to soothe them, calm them down, so they don't go into shock, because going into shock is life-threatening. So if you were the midwife, what would you tell a woman like that? I think I would tell her, look, don't worry. You're going to pull through. Everything's going to be okay. You're going to dance at this child's chasana. Don't worry. You're going to live. That's what I would tell her. You know what the midwife told her? Al tiri, don't worry. Gamze loch bein, it's a boy. Now, Rachel Imenu is in danger of dying. And eventually she did die from this. Right? What difference did it make to her at that point if it was a boy, a girl, or a giraffe? Well, Lamaisa, tell the woman she's going to live. Don't tell him it's a boy. Well, the midwife knew that Rachel Imenu wanted a child and wanted a second child for one reason, because she wanted to build the Jewish people. And she wanted to contribute another tribe, another shevet. If it was a boy and it was another tribe, it was worth dying for. And if it wasn't, with all due respect to the girl, but it wouldn't be bringing another tribe into Klal Yisrael, then it wasn't worth living for. So the midwife knew the only thing that would calm Rachel Imenu down is to tell her it's a boy. So Rachel Imenu wanted a child for the highest spiritual reasons, to build Klal Yisrael. With that, you're never satisfied with a minimum. I want another one. Nothing wrong with saying that. Never be satisfied with what you have. On the other hand, if she wouldn't be happy with the smallest benefit that she could have from a child, then she'd always be frustrated. It's like we said, you have to be happy with the minimum, but not satisfied with it, and always want more when it comes to spiritual things. What was the minimum? Doesn't mean that Rachel said, I can now blame the child for breaking the plate. What it means is the following. Until now, I didn't have any children. If I broke a plate in the kitchen, people would say, why can't she focus on what she's doing? Why is she breaking plates? She's irresponsible. But now that I have a little baby, you know what they're going to say? All right, the baby probably was up all last night. Her mind is on the baby. She can't focus on what she's doing because her mind is on her baby. So they blame the baby, not that the baby broke the plate, but that she broke the plate due to the fact that her mind is now on the baby and not on what she's doing. So that's her excuse. That's the idea. She's not going to blame the baby for what she did. people will understand that perhaps she can't be as focused and responsible because her mind is on her baby. That was the smallest benefit that she could get. But if she wasn't happy with that, then she'd be very frustrated. So I'm happy even with the smallest benefit, but I want more. I'm not satisfied with that. Since I want it for spiritual reasons, I want the most. I want to aspire and long for higher and higher ideas. So that is the idea of counting the days in the beginning. Rabbeinu Shel Olam, I want to reach the highest level of receiving the Torah. But I'm not going to just stand here at the bottom of the ladder and wish I was at the top. I'm going to have a program. Every day I'm going to try to accomplish something that will bring me a little bit closer. But at the end of the week, I'm also going to look back and I'm going to be happy with what I accomplished, even though I still want to accomplish more. So that's why we count the day, another reason. Why we count the day at the beginning of the day and the week at the end of the week in order to fulfill both of these things. I want to long and aspire towards the highest, highest levels. But I want to also appreciate what I've accomplished and look back every week and say, you know, I haven't reached where I really want to be. I really want to be at the top of that ladder and receive the Torah. But at least I'm 7 days closer to reaching that, 7 days closer than I was last week. So I appreciate what I've accomplished. I'm not satisfied with it. I want to accomplish more. So it's another aspect that we can learn from Shavuos, from Sefiras HaOmer. Another thing that's important when it comes to aspiring towards goals, and that is the following. They say that the Chafetz Chaim used to come to the Beis Medrash in Raden and tell his students at midnight to go to sleep. He used to put out the lights in the Beis Medrash and force them to go to sleep. And the students would protest. What young-blooded, a budding Talmud Chacham wants to go to sleep at midnight. We want to stay in the Beis Medrash and learn till 3 a.m. I mean, how's it going to look, you know, after 120 years when Art Scroll writes our biography that it says when we were 17, we went to sleep at midnight? We wanted to be able to say went to sleep at 3 a.m. Chafetz Chaim said, that's very nice. That's your Yetzer Hara. That's the Satan. He said, what in the world is the Satan going to gain if we learn 3 more hours tonight? He said, I'll tell you. You have to get up in the morning at 7 o'clock. Going to sleep at 3 and giving up at 7, the chances that you'll get up are very slim. So you'll miss davening with a minion. So we already see what the Satan gained. So let's say you can do it. Go to sleep at 3, you'll get up at 7, you'll daven with a minion. How long can you keep up that regimen? A week, 2 weeks, a month? Until you will fall off your feet from exhaustion, and you'll be in bed for a month and won't be able to learn a word. The Satan is a very, very astute businessman. He's patient. He's willing to invest a few hours extra learning now for a whole month of no learning later. And even if that doesn't happen, and you're able to keep up this regimen, but it's going to shorten your life. So you're going to die earlier because you didn't get enough sleep when you were a teenager. And that will take off years of learning Torah that you could have had. So the Satan is patient. He has time. That's, he says, the Chafetz Chaim says, what we say in davening every night. Take the Satan away from in front of us and behind us. Now the Satan is an impediment, right? He's something that prevents you from doing what you're supposed to do. I understand you can have a Satan in front of you, preventing you from doing what you're supposed to do. But how can the Satan be behind you? How can you have an obstacle behind you? Says the Chafetz Chaim, what it means is the following. Sometimes when a person has a tremendous desire to accomplish something, a woman wants to be involved in chesed. She has this tremendous burning desire to get involved in doing chesed. So the Satan sees that her burning desire is so strong that if he tries to stop her, be an obstacle in front of her, she'll steamroll him over. There's no way of stopping him. So you know what he does? He runs around behind her and he pushes. You want to do chesed? Fine. Chesed in the morning, chesed in the afternoon, chesed at night. Don't eat, don't sleep, don't see your family. Right? Only chesed. All day. How long will it take for her to burn out? And she won't want to look at chesed for the next 20 years? A week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? So that's how the satan can be behind you and push you to go too fast. If you try to jump up a ladder instead of going one rung slowly at a time, you usually fall back and break your neck. So you have to pace yourself. You can't go too fast in ascending that ladder. You can't go too slow. And that's why when it comes to the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, everybody has to count for themselves. Even though we're all counting the same count, but it's an individual thing. It's not something that somebody else can do for you. No two people are alike. For one person, the pace of ascending that ladder and improving one's character, improving one's shmiras hamitzvos, benodon lamakom, benodon lamak lachavero, right? Improving one's Torah learning is a faster pace. And for somebody else, it's a slower pace. Everybody has their own personal sphera, and you can't be yotzei with somebody else's. That is another idea. Another idea is this concept that it's a personal thing is the following. A person can have tremendous aspirations and goals and want to reach higher and higher levels. Can have those aspirations for himself, the expectations of what he would like to achieve, and many times for others. Person has expectations for their children. They would like their children to be on the highest level, big talmidei chachamim, tzidkaniyos. Some people, when they're young, have expectations for their parents. They would like their parents to be frumer. They'd like their parents to be better people, whatever it may be. So you have expectations for yourself, and you have expectations for others. So how should you deal? Should you deal with yourself and with others according to your expectations or according to the reality of the situation? Let me give you an example. And then I'll tell you where I learned this idea from. Imagine a mother who has a child, a 9-year-old, who excels in Torah learning, very fine, midos, and she sees in this child the next Chazon Ish. This child is going to be the Chazon Ish of his generation. And she imagines, I'm going to be the mother of the Chazon Ish. She sees the future in her mind. Right here, my child is going to be the future Gadol HaDor. One day, she sees her 9-year-old riding his bicycle. She says, what are you doing? Get off that bicycle. The Chazon Ish doesn't ride bicycles. Get off that bicycle, get in the house, put your feet in ice water, and learn for the next 23 hours. She's going to destroy that child. She has expectations that he's going to be the Chazon Ish, but right now he's a 9-year-old who has to ride his bike. You can't deal with him according to your expectations. You have to deal with him according to the reality. Now give him the incentive to grow and to aspire, but deal with him as he is right now, not as you would like him to be in the future. Where did I learn this from? The following. The Rabban Hashem tells the Jewish people, we are going to eradicate the 7 nations in Eretz Yisrael slowly. Because if we eradicate them too quickly, you're not going to be able to populate the areas where you are ridding it of these 7 nations. And the land will be desolate until you can repopulate it. And in desolate land comes wild animals, and they're going to cause you a problem. So in order to avoid the problem of wild animals, we will decimate these 7 nations slowly, so you'll be able to populate the land as quickly as you decimate them, and there won't be a problem with wild animals. Rashi there asks the following question. God promised us that if we fulfill his word, if we fulfill the Torah, we won't have to worry about wild animals. So what's the problem? I'm sure that the Rabban Hashem wanted to get rid of these 7 nations as fast as possible. They were the dregs of society. They were a blight on the whole world. Let's get rid of them as quick as possible. And if you do what you're supposed to do, then there's no problem getting rid of them quickly, because you won't have to worry about wild animals. But God knew, said Rashi, that the Jewish people were not going to do what they're supposed to do. And they were going to sin. And they'd have to worry about wild animals. So the Rabban Shalom said, okay, we'll have to accommodate your low level and do it slowly, not with my original program, in order that you shouldn't worry about wild animals. I know what this can be compared to. When I speak to teachers, I tell them the following. Imagine a teacher who the first time in her life is given a fourth grade class to teach for the coming year. She's never taught fourth grade. She spends the whole summer preparing a lesson plan for her fourth graders. Beautiful lesson plan. She comes the first day of school, and she sees that these fourth graders learn nothing in third grade. They locked the teacher in the closet the first day and partied the rest of the year. So they're on third grade level. They never learned anything in third grade. So her lesson plan is really not suitable for them because they're not on a fourth grade level. Now she has two choices. She can say, you know what? My lesson plan is perfect if you would have done what you're supposed to do. If you would have learned last year and been on a fourth grade level, then my lesson plan is perfect. You didn't do what you're supposed to do, so suffer. I'm going to give my lesson plan to fourth graders, even though it's above your head. Or she can say, look, I have to face the reality of the situation. These children are not on a fourth grade level. I'm going to have to redo my lesson plan to accommodate their lower level. What does God do? The second. And therefore, you have to deal with people and yourself, not as you would like to be, not as you're aspiring to be, not as your expectations are, but give your children, give your parents, give yourself the incentive to grow, to long and aspire. At the same time, deal with yourself, deal with your children, deal with your parents on the level they're on now, not on the level you would like them to be on or have expectations for them. And therefore also, Sfiras HaOmer is a very personal thing. You have to deal each day where you are, have aspirations for the future, but deal with the reality of the situation as it is now, not as if you're already on the top of the ladder. Not only are the aspirations and growing very important and positive, but even sometimes if you fail and you regress and you fall back, you have aspirations and you grow and you fall back from your growth and you regress, could be also a positive thing based on this idea. That's the following. It says, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, Vayelech Haran. Yaakov left Be'er Sheva and he went to Haran. So Chazal asked the following question. We know from the previous Sedra that Yaakov was in Be'er Sheva. Why does it have to tell me he left Be'er Sheva and went to Haran? All it has to tell me is he went to Haran. You can't be in two places in the same time. So if he went to Haran, he must have left Be'er Sheva. It's understood. Why did the Torah have to explicitly say he left Be'er Sheva? So Rashi tells us in the name of Chazal, Melamed Shaziva Tzadik Min Hamakom Osarosha. When a tzadik leaves a place, it makes an impression. By meaning the following, that when the tzadik is in the place, hu ziva, hu hoda, hu ha'adora. When a tzadik is in a place, he brings beauty and glory and light to the place. Says the Maral, he enlightens them with his Torah knowledge and he glorifies them with mitzvos and he beautifies them with good character traits. Yotza tzadik min ha'ir. When the tzadik leaves the place, Pana ziva, pana holda, pana hadar. Everything leaves with him. So I don't know why Rashi describes that as when a tzaddik leaves a place, it makes an impression. Oh, sarosha. I would think that you should describe what happens as mechasarosha. It takes away an impression. Not it makes an impression. something negative happens, not something positive. So why does Rashi describe it as Azivas Sadik Minamakam Osarosha? Makes an impression. He should have said it takes away an impression. And the answer is very simple. Before the Tzaddik came to that place, there was no light and no glory and no beauty. The Tzaddik came and brought all those things to that city. And now the Tzaddik leaves and takes it all with him. What are you going to tell me? That things went back to the way it was to begin with? No, it's very different. Because before the Tzaddik came to the city, these things didn't exist there. But nobody missed them. They never experienced them. So they had no desire for them. Once the Tzaddik came and he enlightened the city and beautified it and glorified it, and now he left, and now those things are missing. People now feel that something's missing and they have a tremendous aspiration and longing to get it back. That's a positive impression. That longing and that aspiration to regain what they lost is also a very positive thing. So sometimes a person can reach a goal and then fall back, regress. He's not back where he started because he tasted what that goal is like, and now he has a tremendous reason to aspire and long to get it back. How do you engender these kinds of aspirations? So one way is by learning about the life of great people and see what great people can accomplish, and gives you a desire to do similar things and to reach similar levels. However, there's one caveat, there's one condition. Learning about great people, gedolim, or great women, you have to look at them as human beings, not as angels. If you look at them as supermen and superwomen, and even though compared to us, it says, in Rishonim kemalachim onu kibnei adam. If we look at the Rishonim, at the earlier people like angels, then we're regular people. And if we look at them as regular people, then we are like animals, and not even like great animals, just plain, ordinary animals. So it would seem that you're supposed to look up to them like angels. But it doesn't mean to look at them like supermen and superwomen and angels, but people who accomplish what angels can do. Why? I'll give you an example. When I first came to Eretz Yisrael, the only time as a tourist, so my wife and myself toured the country on our own, and we went to all the Mekomos HaKadoshim. And after a few days, my wife commented that except for the Mokom HaMikdash, all of the Mekomos HaKadoshim are graves. Moras HaMachpelah, the grave of the in Tzfas, and so on. Graves are placed that you become Tomei. Why didn't they make Rabbi Akiva's Beis Medrash instead of his grave, his stender, right? Why his grave? Why are the Mekomos HaKadoshim graves? And I told her the following. I said, because if you look at these great people as something different than us, they were born supermen and superwomen. They were born like angels. Right? They never had a Yetzer Hara. They knew the Shas when they were 5 years old. They never forgot anything. So it's very entertaining. Reading Superman comics is entertaining, but has nothing to do with me. And my mother told me when I was 3 years old, I put a towel around my neck, and Baruch Hashem, I didn't jump out the window trying to fly, just jumped off the bed. But after three, you realize you're not Superman. So what in the world? They did it because they were supermen and superwomen. But I'm just a plain, ordinary human being. But you have to look at them as plain, ordinary human beings who accomplished what supermen and superwomen can do. How do I know they're human beings? Because they're buried here, they're flesh and blood. And still, look what they accomplished. Then it's inspiring to me. I'm also flesh and blood. And if a flesh and blood can accomplish and be like an angel, then maybe I could also be like an angel. Maybe not the same potential, but at least I can also do something. But if I look at them as something apart, supermen and superwomen, right, a different breed, then has nothing to do with me. It's just entertaining to learn about them. And it's not only to learn about great gedolim and great women, but look at your neighbor. Everybody has something special about them that you can look up to. you may be better with them in keeping Shabbos, but they're better with than you than guarding their tongue. So aspire to be like them when it comes to guarding your tongue, and they'll aspire to be like you when it comes to keeping Shabbos, and so on. Look for the areas that other people around you excel in, and use them as a model to aspire to be like them and to raise your level. So that is how a person has to learn from Sfiras HaOmer to aspire towards higher and higher goals, and the way to do it, not to jump up all of a sudden, not to just aspire, but to have a program, one rung at a time, in a very personal way, not to go too fast or too slow, not to function according to your expectations, but according to the reality. Have aspirations, but know how to look at the reality of the situation as it exists. And all of those things are part of being able to lead a successful life of constantly aspiring and growing towards greater and greater goals. Because if you don't grow towards greater and greater goals, then you will atrophy and you'll inevitably go down. Someone once told me this world is like a down escalator that you're trying to run up. Children do it all the time. Adults would like to do it, but they hold themselves back. If you run up a down escalator, if you stop, you go down. If you put in some effort, you may stand still. If you put in a lot of effort, you get a little bit higher. So if we don't aspire and don't work towards higher and higher goals, and every year during Sfiras HaOmer, we practice this idea of aspiring towards the giving of the Torah and climbing that ladder one day at a time, if you don't do that and you try to practice what I call status quo Judaism. I did it last week like this. This is the way I learned. This is the way I was. This is the way I kept Shabbos. I don't want to improve. I don't want to grow. I have no aspirations and no goals. I just do everything status quo the way that it was yesterday. Inevitably, you're going to go down and down and down. And you're not going to not only not improve, you're going to regress. So this time of year is very important to be able to acquire the concept of aspirations towards goals and reaching them in the way that we mentioned with all of the conditions. And in that way, we all will grow, have a life. When you speak to a living person, you say goodbye to them, you say, Lech Lishalom, go towards perfection, because we're never there. We're always reaching towards perfection. On the other hand, when you say goodbye for the last time to somebody who's no longer alive at their funeral, we say, Lech Bishalom, go with perfection, not towards it. You've reached whatever you're going to reach, go with the perfection that you reach. But a living person is always going to grow more and more and to achieve more and more and to ascend that ladder more and more. And the time of the year to acquire this quality is now during Sfiras HaOmer.
Rabbi Left, there was a question in the chat earlier on. I'll just read it. It says, Kvod HaRav, how can we still long strongly for the Torah that we don't have, since we already have Torah? And if we would not have the Torah in full yet, how can we long strongly for something we never had?
Okay. Two questions there. First idea is, how did they long for something they never had, but they were given a taste of the Torah already in Mitzrayim? They were given certain mitzvahs, the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, the mitzvah of Matzah and Chametz and Korban Pesach. So they had a taste of what mitzvahs were. So, and God had told them, you're going to get a lot more, right, in 50 days. So from that taste that they had a tremendous desire now to get more. That is answers the first part. The second part, we already have the Torah, but everybody's level of Torah whether their knowledge of Torah or their level of Torah observance, the quality of Torah observance, the quality of working on your character, there's always room to improve. So we have the Torah, but we can long to receive more and more and climb higher and higher in both the quantity and quality of our Torah learning and Torah observance. So it's a never-ending quest of constant improvement, constant quest towards perfection.
How does it reflect, hello?
Yes.
How does that reflect in our own life when we're reading, when we are counting the Omer on a weekly basis with all the quality they're supposed to give? How can we use that to benefit us?
Okay, I think that you have to do more than just fulfill the bare skeleton mitzvah of counting the day. That's the start. But each day represents a different character trait of God that we're supposed to emulate. There are seven basic character traits: Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malchus. Each one represents a different character trait that a person is supposed to engender. And each day is a combination of all those seven parts in each of the seven. So it's 49 days. And each day you're supposed to work on a different character trait. And there are books in Hebrew and English that explain these character traits in a very practical way, what you can do to work on them. Also, there are 48 things that a person needs to acquire Torah learning. So hone in each day on one of those 48 things and work on that. Think about it. Put it into practice in a small way that day. So there are many things that a person can think about and put into practice day by day. Not just count the day, but make the day count and fill it up with something that will help you to improve your Torah learning and your Torah observance.
Thank you.
Is that Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah?
That's part of it. Part of the preparation is preparing yourself to be the kind of vessel that can contain the Torah. Torah is like fire, but if you're asbestos, it's not going to make any impression on you. So you have to make sure you're not asbestos.